When you hear of a popular brand success like Skims, Rode, Rare Beauty, or Aloe Yoga, you may think that all just comes from having a great product. But most people don't realize that it's the business behind the business that drives that success. There's an overlooked secret that makes selling and shopping simple. And that secret is Shopify. So the secret's out. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. It's the home of the number one checkout on the planet, meaning way less carts abandoned and way more sales going. I've been using it myself for 2 years with my own brand of women's feminine clothing and lingerie, so I know what the hype is all about. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/forthegirls, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/forthegirls to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/forthegirls.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of For the Girls. I'm your host, Victoria Alario. And today we have my best friend, Allie Munch, back on the pod for part three of our seemingly never-ending conversation. If you're listening and want to watch this episode, the video will be available on YouTube. So head over there if you want to actually see our conversation. We laugh a lot. So sometimes you might hear just like silence of laughter. But if you're watching, then you'll know that's what's going on. But this episode is so good. I'm so excited for you girls to hear it. If you don't know, I had Allie on in May of 2023 for the first time for just what was supposed to be a simple girl chat episode. We were just bullshitting, and she even talked about not knowing if she ever wants to have kids and having a huge fear of giving birth at all. And then shortly after we recorded that episode, she got pregnant with her ex-boyfriend. So then I had her back on the pod shortly after that in July of 2023 when she announced her pregnancy, and we talked about the huge life transition that she made in only a few months after feeling so lost to then finding God, being in a happy and healthy and fulfilling relationship, and being so ready for motherhood, and being in a happy, healthy, and fulfilling relationship with her ex that I just mentioned that they had broken up at that time. And so her life completely changed. She went from being scared of the thought of motherhood to being so abundantly ready and excited for motherhood. And now we have her back on a whole year later, July of 2024. She has a beautiful 5-month-old baby girl. She is a devoted mom, partner, and follower of Jesus. And she shares such a beautiful testimonial about her faith and what it's done for her and how it saved her and helped her do a complete 180 and have a healthy relationship. And today we also talk about all the good, bad, and ugly of postpartum and how tough the beginning of her postpartum journey was for her and how much better it's gotten now as she's approaching, you know, the 4 and 5 month mark. We also talk about the importance of having a good partner to raise your kids with, and yes, getting back with an ex from a healed and completely evolved place to make sure your relationship is stronger and better than it ever was before. So I know a lot of girls are going to want to hear about that. There's just a lot. There is so much to unpack in this conversation, and it truly is for all the girls. So let's get right into it. Okay, everyone, please welcome back Allie, my bestie, to For the Girls. This is like our trilogy, I was just saying on my story. Part three, welcome back. So happy to have you.
Hello, girls. I am so happy to be back. I cannot believe
How much has changed since the first one? And honestly, even the second one, there's just been, it's been a whirlwind in the best way possible. And I'm just excited to share this crazy journey.
So I think that it was about May from the first one. I feel like we recorded on like May 1st. Yep. And then you got pregnant a few weeks after that. And then I believe, yeah, it was July. I believe it might have been exactly a year ago mm-hmm. that we did the follow-up. So give us a refresher, like tell everybody who you are first, introduce yourself, and then give us a refresher for maybe anyone who didn't like hear those episodes on like why we're like now on part three.
Yeah. Okay. So my name's Allie. I am 26. I'm a mom to a 5-month-old baby girl, live in New York. And we started the first episode by just kind of like, it was silly. It was goofy. It was just us, you know, being us, talking, laughing, making jokes. And that person that if you haven't listened to it, if you do listen to it, it's a completely different person than I am today in so many ways. I was so lost. I was lost in life. And even though it might have not seemed like it then, because, you know, I had a good career and I had, you know, I have a great family and everything looked good. But on the inside, I was just really struggling. And in June, right before I found out I was pregnant, I was saved. I gave my life to Jesus. And that completely altered every single thing. Why am I already crying?
Wait, I fully, my arms, like if you're watching on YouTube, please look at the camera. Like my arms just got the chills like as soon as you said that.
Yeah. It completely altered every single thing about me. And every tiny detail about me is different. So I think it was exactly 2 days before I found out I was pregnant. And when I found out I was pregnant, I was not ready to be a mom. I was going out every single night. And I was just being a young, dumb 20-year-old who just had no real direction in life other than making money. Like that's literally it. And I think everything would have been a whole lot different if I was not saved. If I did not watch The Chosen that night, if I did not give my life to Jesus, I don't know where I would be today. I don't know what would have happened. So in that moment, it was a battle in my brain. It was a battle. I remember calling you hysterically crying and being like, what do I do? And you're like, well, we're going to raise this baby together. That's what we're going to do. I just feel so grateful for my salvation because it makes momming a totally different experience. Not that I was a mom before being saved, but I just know that my strength and my sanity really does come from Jesus. And that is why we are here today.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, I mean, you girls are hearing, you know, little things, you know, hour-long episodes, but Allie and I, the reasons why these episodes even came to be is because Allie and I have been friends for 6 years now. So I know Allie, and I remember back, oh my God, like we lived in Tampa, like back years ago, and you know, like I used to always like try to get you to like not drink, and I'd be like, be boring with me, and like, just hang out with me, and like sometimes she would, and it was like, Allie had like her cool life and her cool friends from like college. And then she had like her days that where she didn't feel like doing anything. And she'd be like, I'll hang out with Vic today. Cause like, that's my boring friend. And like, I was totally here for it. I'm like, I'm going to get you over to my side. And now she's totally out adult in me. I'm like, what the hell? This was not supposed to happen. I feel like that was one of the things you said. You were like, one of my first thoughts was like, how did I get pregnant before Vic?
I still wonder that.
It's so funny. But like we go back, okay? We go way back. And when Allie says like that she was lost and her life has changed and her entire journey with Jesus and everything that you have done in the past little over a year now, you truly have. And as a friend, just like somebody watching you, like I could not be more proud of you. I love watching like your transition. Mm-hmm. I always knew that, like, not to say that this was going to be like your future, not to be like, yeah, I knew you were going to like have a kid. I didn't, but I knew like one day you were going to have that switch.
Yep.
And
I feel like we've had these conversations before in the past, and I just seeing it now happen, like your transition is bigger than I ever imagined it would be for you. And I thought the world of you then. And now I'm like, oh my God, you've even exceeded like any thoughts that I ever had. And like, I truly, 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 like I look up to you, honestly. And I feel like it takes a lot to really put yourself like into a position where like you're really uncomfortable to like, I don't know how to word this like properly, but I also want to like make sure that I say it appropriately in the sense where it's like, it's not easy to go from like where you were at to being like, okay, I am willing to like give myself to Jesus and I am willing to do those things. Because, you know, even for me, like I grew up Catholic. I grew up having a pretty good relationship with Jesus my whole life, but never been so like vocal. Like I just have a different relationship. And I do think that part of that also comes with like imposter syndrome and feeling like, not to say embarrassed, but just not feeling fully like there to like really openly share. And seeing you with like, you know, no shame and so proud and like truly like openly wanting to just do like the Lord's work, I guess. Mm. I feel like, yeah, like I said, it just exceeds anything that I ever imagined would be the case for you. And I think it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of, you know, like heart and soul and conviction. And so, yeah, you really have changed your life. And like, it's something that you should be extremely proud of.
Thank you. I mean, I have no words for that because it doesn't feel like my work. Like it really doesn't. It doesn't feel like it truly just feels like the Holy Spirit constantly pouring out of me. When I speak of Jesus, sometimes I'm like, where did those words even come from? Because it's not my own brain. And
you could feel that it's something bigger than you. Like you don't give yourself necessarily the credit of like, oh, that came from me or that was my thought. It's like, this is, you know, Jesus speaking through me. This is absolutely Jesus like using me to share these things. And so I do think that it's powerful. And listen, not everybody who's listening to this is going to resonate, and that's perfectly fine if it doesn't resonate. But the point is of why I think we really need to share this is that like, there's going to be girls who are hearing this who are lost or who are in positions that Allie was in previously. And even if this is not your mission, even if you're like, I don't have that sort of relationship with Jesus, or I'm not really necessarily even looking to have that relationship with Jesus, even if that's the case, let this at least be a sign that there is still hope for you, regardless of what your mission is, what your life is going to look like. There is so much hope of getting out of where you were and getting to the place of where you want to be and seeing that growth and whatever that journey looks like for you. So you don't necessarily have to fully resonate, but the point is you can look at Allie's testimonial and just say like, if she can do it, so can I. And if she could go from being that like young, lost 20-year-old to a fully devoted mom and partner at 26, like, of course I could do the same for myself and have that complete 180. Aside from connecting with God and that being necessarily your roadmap, how would you give like tangible advice to somebody who feels like they're in that place of, okay, I'm at rock bottom, or I am not where I want to be right now. I want to work on myself. Like, are there certain things that you had to do to transition from point A to point B that someone who's there wants to get to your next point that they could potentially do?
Yeah, I mean, there is major sacrifice. And I think, you know, if you're not someone who's going to lean on Jesus, that is okay, right? Like, I'm not here to push that on anyone. The other side to that is you're going to have to make sacrifices in how you spend your time. You're going to have to make sacrifices in who you spend your time with. Because if you are trying to get out of this place, this dark place, but you are staying in the same circle that is in the dark, you're never going to make it to the light, because they are going to hold you back. They're going to drag you down. You're going to make one step forward. They're going to take you two steps back, because if they're not wanting to grow with you, if they're not on the same page as you, you need to turn that page and move forward and find people who you can really connect with and they can help you, because you can't do it on your own. That's the truth. And while yes, you can absolutely make strides by yourself, you're going to want someone to hold you accountable. You're going to want someone to help you and inspire you. If you are in a position where you feel absolutely no inspiration in your surroundings, you have to change that first. And when I got pregnant, I immediately moved home. Like, I can honestly tell you the people I was surrounding myself with when I was living in Tampa, not all of them, but the people I spent the most time with are not the people who were ever going to inspire me to do better and be better and to be a better person so I could be a better mom. And so that was like the first thing I did. I was like, well, we have to change my environment. We have to change what I'm listening to, what I'm watching, everything, absolutely everything. And it's hard because bad habits have to die hard to move forward. And just know that things can change quickly, quite literally suddenly. And if you feel like it's never going to get better and you don't even know where to start, start by finding one person who can help guide you. And hey, I'll be that person. I don't care if we've never talked a day in our lives. I can be that person for you to just help you take that first step.
Yeah, 100%. Well, first of all, I mean, you have that like servant leadership, like just quality in you. So I think that that right there like speaks volumes, you even saying that. But I love that point that you just made, because I think it's something that would be so obvious but so often overlooked. I feel like people will say like, I'm so lost or whatever, but then what have we always said? Like, you are the company you keep. If you hang around five millionaires, you're going to be the sixth. If you hang around five, you know, dopey people, you're going to be the sixth dopey person, like whatever the case is, like you are the company you keep. You are, you know, we're all like guilty by association, you know, like that's where I'm trying to think of like the way to really word it, but like that's ultimately reality. That's ultimately life. And I think no one ever thinks like, maybe I should outgrow these friendships. No one ever thinks it's possible to remove the certain friendships. No one ever thinks it's possible to work on and better your relationships, like meaning your partner or your family, like whatever the case is. Like, water the good that you have around you. Like, see the good in the good things that you have around you and make them great, make them even better. And then anything that you're not, that's just not serving you for the greater good, like, I'm sorry, it's time to part ways. And sometimes that might mean ending like what was once close friendships, which I'm sure you've had to do as well.
Yeah. It's hard. It's heartbreaking. I feel like going through a breakup with your significant other is almost equally as heartbreaking as cutting off friendships that were really close and you have great memories with. But you have to sometimes be selfish for your future, in the way where you need to stop surrounding yourself with people who you know are just not going to help you or inspire you. And that doesn't have to be forever. Maybe you inspire that group of people and they're like, hey, wait, I'm coming with you. Like, I want to change too. I don't want to stay like this. So your change could inspire a whole lot of change around you as well.
Yeah, that's so true. And I love that you mentioned like being selfish. Like, if your selfishness and your boundaries and the choices that you make to better yourself offends people and makes them feel that scarcity mindset and makes them like upset or angry with you or resentful toward you, then that tells you everything that you need to know about, you know, the people that you are ultimately surrounding yourself with. Because at the end of the day, like I even just said with us, like, we've been through so many seasons of, and trust me, guys, like, I kind of like went in on Allie a little bit when she was younger, but I'm no saint either. Allie has stood by me too, okay? They're my shit too. So we have stayed with each other through each other's seasons, good and bad. And that's like the entire point. Like, if you can't be supportive throughout all of that, then like, essentially, those are some relationships that you are going to have to, you know, cut ties with.
Right. And honestly, things can change so quickly. You might feel like there's no hope right now, but tomorrow things can be completely different. And I honestly don't feel like you should have a timeline on, you know, if things don't get better by this date, you know, I'm giving up on this or I'm doing this. Like, You can't put a date on radical change, but what you can do is just remain hopeful. And even if you don't believe in God, if you don't believe in Jesus, you can still pray. You can ask for hope. You can ask for strength. You don't have to lean on your own strength. But what I will say again is Jesus truly did radically change my life and who I am. And if you feel like you're at rock bottom, if you feel like there's no hope and you've tried everything, don't try the church, try Jesus. Because I think a lot of people might have tried church, right? Maybe you got hurt by the people at church, you felt judged. Jesus will never judge you. And he is there to lift you up, to be your rock, to be your strength. And once again, I don't want to push this on anyone, but that is just genuinely how I came to be in this place of nothing but hope, even on my worst day.
Yeah. And I do feel like you had a change very quickly. Like, I actually remember. Okay. So you, no, if this is bad, I'll cut it out. But okay. Obviously before, like super before the, like getting pregnant, you were not in this position. And then, like you said, right before you found out you were pregnant was when you watched The Chosen and whatever. Yeah. And then when you thought you might be pregnant, you were like, I prayed. You're like, I prayed to Jesus that if I'm not pregnant, like I'll just stay celibate for the rest of my life. I don't know if that's bad for me to share.
It's not bad, but it's so real because
I have the text still. You were like, no, I'm not pregnant. Because if you guys listen, like she was, her first test said negative. So she was like, woo, like not pregnant. Like, and I also prayed that if I'm not pregnant, I'll just stay celibate forever. So I think Jesus was just giving me a gift. And then like from there, it was like, actually false alarm, you are pregnant. And then you were like all in on Jesus.
Yeah. Like I think I can go back in my photos because I took pictures of everything, obviously. But the first test I took was negative, and that was, I think, a week before I was saved. Mm-hmm. A week before I gave my life to Jesus. And so, yeah, I literally was on, I can picture in my head right now, I was on my bathroom floor on my knees, literally praying, like, God, please, if I'm not pregnant, like, I will never have sex again. I will be celibate for the rest of my life. Like, I will never do anything bad again. Like, pleading.
And then he was like, ha ha.
He said, you know what? I'll do you one better. I will give you salvation. And you know what? Can't complain.
It is so true. It is so true.
Do you struggle to find comfort in your body? Do you experience cravings, bloating? If so, then you need Hormone Harmony, the solution for women of all ages to maintain optimal hormone levels. It reduces bloating and discomfort and supports your mood and general well-being. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in the reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code FORTHEGIRLS for 15% off today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, speaking of fast changes, we got to talk about the childbirth experience because like we mentioned before, like you were terrified of actually giving birth, the birthing yeah. process. But then after you had the baby and we were on FaceTime, you're like, and I said to you like, okay, so was it dreadful? You were like, oh no, giving birth was the easiest part. I'm like, wait, what? So talk about a change. I need to understand, like, what was your birth experience like? Why was the actual, like, giving birth the easiest part?
Well, I have to start by saying I got an epidural and pressed the button twice. So, I mean, I couldn't feel a single thing. But I will say, like, it was genuinely my biggest fear. And, like, had myself convinced that, like, birth would be the worst thing ever. Like, it would genuinely be horrible. And while I will say the contractions were no joke, I had also had myself convinced that contractions would feel like period cramps and I would be fine. So that's really funny. But I was more so scared of, like, literally delivering a baby. And in the moment, nothing else matters besides pushing your baby out. Like, nothing. So you're so focused on just pushing and literally nothing else. And then before you know it, your baby is on your chest and your whole world changes in the most beautiful way possible. And I remember saying on that first podcast, I don't know how childbirth can be beautiful, maybe beautiful for some people, but not for me. And let me tell you, it is beautiful. It's the craziest kind of beautiful you could ever imagine. But the love that you feel in that moment is not even comparable to anything you will ever feel aside from that.
But then, like, okay, you have the epidural. I'm going to get, like, graphic. So, like, that makes you numb. But then, like, when it wears off, are you in this pain of, like, wait, my vagina is now, like, the size of a basketball? Like, what happens there?
Yeah, so I couldn't feel anything for hours after. Like, I was like, I feel great. I'm a rock star. So when you called me, I was probably still completely numb and loopy because I didn't even make it to the epidural. They gave me narcotics before the epidural because I was screaming and, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not well. Meanwhile, Nick is sitting on the little chair in the corner with headphones and a hat on and sleeping. And I was like, get up right now. You are not sleeping. And at that point, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I need something. And before this, I said, I'm going to go as long as I can without an epidural. I want to make it to 8 centimeters before I get the epidural. I made it to not even 3 centimeters.
Wait, why were you screaming from the contractions? Like, you were in that much pain beforehand?
My contractions. So I actually went in for an induction, but I didn't end up getting induced. All they did was insert Cervidil, which softens your cervix. And we didn't know, but I was already having contractions before they did anything. So my body was preparing to go into labor naturally. So it just ended up working out perfectly. But my contractions were so close together that I didn't have a break in between to, like, recover and catch my breath. Like, it was contraction after contraction after contraction, and it wouldn't stop. And I also wasn't dilating that much. So it was, like, a slow process while my contractions just kept speeding up. So I could not catch my breath, and I needed the pain to end.
Got it. So it was like pain before, then you get the narcotics and you get the epidural, you press twice, whatever that means. So then that part was like numb. Now you have the baby and then, like, it wore off and then you started to, like, be in pain again, kind of.
Yeah. So it was just, like, extreme, like, soreness. And I mean, you're, like, still bleeding for weeks after.
Well,
so
yeah, I remember you, like, sending me a picture on the toilet being like, I'm struggling.
Like, I don't know how when you want to get into, like, the recovery part or if we're still in the birth part, but the birth part was probably the easiest part of it all, just because, one, you can't feel anything, and two, my labor was so fast. Like, I was only in labor for maybe like 9 hours, and I only pushed for about 10 to 15 minutes because it was almost a dry birth because my water broke like 2 weeks before giving birth.
And oh, yes.
It ended up, like, resealing. So I was just slowly leaking fluid. So I was in the doctor like 3-4 times a week, constantly getting, like, the non-stress test, constantly getting sonograms, making sure she was okay, making sure I was okay. And so it got to the point, which is why I went in for an induction, where she needed to come out because there was not enough fluid in there for her to be safe. So the doctor looks at me and he's like, if you don't push this baby out right now, you're getting a C-section. And I was like, got it. Best believe I went into full prayer mode. I had my worship music blasting and I was pushing like I literally had no choice because I didn't have a choice. So they ended up vacuuming her out because her head was out, but like nothing was happening. So God bless. She's here healthy. I'm healthy. And
oh, wow. So wait, I just want to backtrack because then we will get into recovery. But you mentioned like about the water breaking 2 weeks before, which I actually remember. I remember thinking like, okay, you're going to have the baby now. Mm-hmm. And what does, like, is that not like a bad thing? Like, what does that mean? Because like nothing bad, thank God, came of it. But I never heard of someone's water breaking way before actually giving birth.
Yeah. So really, when your membranes rupture and your water breaks, you are supposed to go in and have the baby because you could get an infection. So I guess, I don't know, I really trusted my doctor and I was like, whatever you say is good. I think because it resealed pretty fast, her head was blocking. It was something where it was like not that big of a deal. But every time I would like make a sudden movement or I would breathe weird, water would flow out. And I'm like calling the doctor. I'm like, there was another gush. Hi, I have to come in. So I think they just wanted her to stay in as long as possible, obviously to develop. But yeah, most cases, the doctor's like, all right, go to the hospital. We're having this baby.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Well, thank God. Like you said, God bless that you are both very healthy and she is absolutely perfect and I love her and I could not stop kissing her when I saw her. I wanted to eat her, to be completely honest. So luckily I was not biting, just kissing.
The daily struggle. I'm like, I'm literally gonna bite your legs off.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the recovery then. You're now just about 5 months postpartum. How was the recovery and the postpartum experience, especially those first 3 months? Because I know they were really hard on you. But then, of course, I know afterwards things got a lot better. So you could share the positives that came after that, too.
So the first 3 weeks in itself were really challenging on my body. More so, like, simply just my body, because I had an episiotomy. So I was recovering with the stitches. And this is absolutely disgusting, so sorry. But I had two giant hemorrhoids. And they were so big, pushing up against the stitches. So I couldn't walk. I literally could not move my legs. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't walk. Nick would carry me to the shower. He would carry me around the apartment. I called my doctor in the shower, screaming, crying, out of breath, like, give me a fix to this. So got medicine, good to go. A few days later, I was moving a little bit more. But honestly, all you're doing is laying in bed with your baby, feeding, sleeping. That's it. Anyway, it's like Groundhog's Day every day. And after the 3 weeks, my body felt great, good to go. And then the exhaustion hit. And that's where I started struggling mentally, because I was so tired that I felt like I was hallucinating. I would wake up in the middle of the night freaking out that I lost Emiliana in the sheets. Like, meanwhile, she is very much in her bassinet sleeping. Like, I was so exhausted. So Nick went back to work after the 3 weeks. My sister-in-law actually came to help, but I put a lot of pressure on myself because I knew he had to be up early. I knew he was going to be working all day, and he still was so helpful. When I would wake up in the middle of the night to feed her, you know, he was up like just holding my leg, being like, I'm here. And, you know, obviously doing diaper changes and all the things that didn't include breastfeeding, but I still put a lot of pressure on myself. Just because I wanted it to be, I didn't want him to be exhausted during the day. And over time, things got easier with exhaustion because I think my body just adjusted. But then she was colicky. So now I am going absolutely mentally insane because she wouldn't stop crying all day. Cry, cry, scream, cry. No one wanted to come over because it was just so brutal. Like, not even kidding. People were like, why doesn't she ever stop crying? I'm like, I don't know. And before I found out she was just colicky, I thought I was eating something I shouldn't be eating, drinking something I shouldn't be eating. So here I am cutting everything you can cut out. I cut out dairy. I cut out soy. I cut out caffeine. I cut out anything. I was so paranoid to eat because I was like, I know it's something I'm eating that's making her upset and I don't want her to cry. I'd rather starve, but you can't starve yourself because you're producing milk. So it's just a constant battle of like, what am I doing wrong and why am I the worst mother on this planet? I just felt like I could do nothing right because she was constantly crying. So I eventually found out that she was colicky and the doctor's like, she'll just grow out of it. I'm like, great, that's absolutely no help to me right now because I'm losing my mind. Nights were the absolute worst. She would have this thing called like the witching hour, where from probably 7 p.m. to sometimes almost 3 a.m., she was just screaming and screaming and screaming, and her face would literally turn bright red and purple, and we would take her clothes off, run the shower. There was nights where I would just have to sit on the bathroom floor because the only thing that would calm her down was the shower running. Like, we tried everything. There was nights where Nick would bounce on the ball, like the pregnancy ball, because that's the only thing like the bouncing would help. So then when my sister-in-law was visiting, she was like, you should try the wrap, like you should try this, like the Solly baby wrap that I always wear with her, because that was the solution. I had to baby wear all day from the moment we woke up to the moment she went to sleep. She was in this wrap because it was the only way she would sleep. It's the only way she would stop crying. The only, like, literally the only thing. So then I started to feel absolutely trapped because I couldn't put her down. I couldn't use the bathroom without her on me. I couldn't eat. It just felt like I was losing myself altogether. And the only reason I think I didn't completely break down, Jesus, truly, like I was in constant prayer. I was constantly listening to worship music, reading the Bible, and just holding on to Him as my strength, because I did not have the strength in me. I did not have the mental capacity to continue on without Him truly giving me all my strength, because that was the hardest 3 months of my life. And I can't even imagine, in that moment, I was like, I can never have another child. I can never go through this again. This is the worst thing. I thought I was never going to be able to go to a restaurant again. I thought I was never going to leave the house again, because I was always embarrassed to bring her somewhere because she was always scream crying. And I'm like, this is it for me. Like, I am chained to my house forever. And thankfully, at about 4 months, she just stopped. One day at a time, she was happier. She was smiling. She wouldn't cry for as long. And now we can just happily go on about our days, and I take her everywhere, and it's just so much more enjoyable. And now I'm like, oh, I could do that again. It's funny how fast you forget. But yeah, those first 3 months were hard.
Yeah. I want to backtrack because you mentioned her being colicky, but you don't mention at any point like a doctor. Like, is there a solution aside from baby wearing to what is that? Like, how do you stop that? There's nothing you could do for her. It just, the only answer is strapping her to your body and then you have to wear her all day.
Yeah. And some babies don't even like that. Some colicky babies, there's literally no solution. They cry and they cry and they cry and they cry. And honestly, I think colic is a cop-out for doctors to not do their job. I think there is always a deeper root cause, and the doctor was quick to just be like, oh, she's colicky, she'll be fine. I'm like, I'm sure she'll be fine, but there's nothing we can do to help her. So I actually posted on Instagram, and this kind woman reached out and told me about this probiotic, and I started her on the probiotic, and I think that's why she has gotten better. I think there was like discomfort in her belly and she like couldn't release the gas. So I don't know if it was a coincidence where I started her on the probiotic and she just grew out of it. I'm not sure. And I didn't really want to make like any claims like that because I don't want to give false hope, but the probiotic I think might have helped, or she grew out of it.
Yeah. And then now, okay, so you started wearing her, then you said at around 4 months, she stopped being colicky, to stop changing. But now, does that mean like you were able to stop wearing her and she was fine? Like, what really happened there? Like, was it just like one day you put her down and she just miraculously was not crying?
Yeah, so I noticed that I was able to. So I started by taking her out of the wrap during the day and putting her down for a nap. And I noticed I was able to do that, which was not the case before if I put her down screaming. So I just started being a little more bold and I would put her in her stroller and go for a walk because she did not want to be in the stroller either, like scream crying. So I started doing the stroller and taking her outside and sitting by the pool and just doing more things with her in the stroller, which then made me think, okay, when we're home, does she really need to be in the wrap anymore? Now I can put her on her play mat and she'll entertain herself for a little bit, or she'll be fine in her swing or her bouncer. So I just started testing little things when I noticed that I could get her out of the wrap and she wouldn't be crying. I'm like, okay, what else could we do? Where, how far could we get?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not all bad. Okay, girls, good things come.
Yeah, I mean, now it's literally the best thing ever. She's my little mini best friend and I am obsessed with her. I mean, I cannot imagine life without her. I think when they call the 3 months after having your baby the fourth trimester, it's real. Like once you get through the fourth trimester, it gets a lot better. Yeah. It really does. And you can't be scared to ask for help. You have to ask for help. I was calling Nick's mom, I was calling my mom, I was calling my grandma. I was like, I need people to make me food. I need you to bring me food. I would request exactly what I wanted. I was so straightforward because I knew going into it, if I put every single bit of responsibility and pressure on me, I would crack and I would break and it would not be pretty. So you can't be embarrassed to ask for help. It does not make you a bad mom. It does not make you incompetent. You have to ask for help. Moms are not supposed to do this alone. It takes a village. And if you don't have a village near you, I'm not even kidding. Go to a local church and ask for help.
Yeah.
Because wow. they have the resources and they are usually more than willing to be of assistance. So don't try and put it all on yourself.
Yeah, that's very good advice. That's so true. And speaking of asking for help, first things first, I think that that's really important that you mentioned that because a lot of women don't. A lot of women take it all on themselves. The husband is out working, which is perfectly fine. That's what he's got to do. But like the husband is unfortunately not home for most of the day with the mom. And the dad is not home. And then the mom is by herself and just doesn't even think, you know, to use some outside help. And I think that that's really important. But on the contrary, on the opposite end, I think pregnancy and motherhood and being a first-time mom especially comes with a lot of people giving unsolicited advice and unsolicited help. You mentioned that a very kind woman messaged you and recommended this probiotic. Great, that worked. But I'm sure you also got tons of messages and comments from people giving unnecessary and unhelpful advice, which ultimately I think causes more anxiety than anything else. I also think just social media in general, there's a million TikTok pages and things and posts and like, this is what you should do. And then this other post says the exact opposite, like, don't do this, do this, like anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? And like, what advice do you offer to girls who are like in that phase right now where they're reading everything and everything's contradicting the other and like unsolicited advice and they don't even know where to start?
Get off of the social media pages for mom advice. Get off and get far away. Because it will drive you so crazy. That's something I really struggled with in pregnancy was I would look for all this like pregnancy advice and the do's and don'ts in pregnancy and then the do's and don'ts of, you know, motherhood. And my head was spinning. I was like, I'm never going to know what to do. I started freaking out. I would cry about it all the time. And when I started looking for solutions to her colic, you know, I would go on TikTok and look for, because sometimes it is helpful, but a majority of the time, it's just going to make you think more is wrong than actually is. Because I came across something on TikTok because she was making like grunting sounds when I would put her down at night. And newborn babies are noisy sleepers, like it's normal. But I, of course, got down a rabbit hole and thought she had some like crazy disease. I wasn't sleeping at night. I was constantly researching it. And if I never went on TikTok and tried to find a solution, I would have never even known about it and it would have been okay. So if you have a concern, call your doctor and do not go to TikTok. Do not go to Instagram. Do not go to these mom pages. Unfollow, block them if you have to. Stop giving them the time of day and call your doctor. That's it.
What Did you ever have like an experience with someone directly saying something to you that you've had to be like, I'm not like interested in this advice?
Every day to this day, I get messages, oh, you should do this, you should do that, you should try this. And not that I don't appreciate it, but it's more overwhelming than anything else. And I just don't answer because I can't even read the messages anymore because it's just too much. And I love that people want to help. It's, you know, it's kind, but sometimes it's just more unhelpful than you'd think.
I also think back to like, okay, I think because this is more, I mean, people always gave unsolicited opinions. This is not a new age thing. This has always existed. But I think it's more prominent now because we have so much access to people through social media. And because you're a first time mom, and because in the past you maybe didn't even know if you wanted to have children, people might see it as like, they need to help you, like you're incapable or something of the sort. Whereas I think back to like, think about all of our parents who were first time moms back, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And then our grandparents who took care of our parents 60 years ago, they didn't have social media. They didn't have all of this information and they figured it out. Like we all turned out okay. And so I feel like if anything, you know, where when a lot of girls are like getting anxiety and overwhelmed with all of this on social media, we have to just realize like, I'm sorry, our great grandparents were not on Instagram when they were having our grandparents, and every single person figured it out and they did all right.
Yep. Like we're here. We're good. Our parents did not have social media. And I think once again, it could be helpful, but it also, every baby is different and you have to trust your motherly instincts. Because if there's one thing I can tell you, when you become a mom, you just something, a switch flips in you and you just know your baby. You just know what that baby needs and you know how to do it. Even if you don't think you know how to do it, trust your instincts.
Yeah. No matter what your life was like before, once that baby is in your arms, that is your baby. And you're like, no one's going to know better, than me. I actually follow someone who, I don't know what happened to her baby, but she just posted something. It seemed like the baby was in the hospital. She had like not tubes, but like things like hooked up to her. And she like wrote on it being like, this is why you need to advocate for your kids, because doctors, I do not know what happened, but it was like doctors were telling me she's fine. And now we're here. My baby was not fine. And I knew it. And moms never let anybody, no doctor, nobody tell you that you're wrong. Like if something seems off with your kid.
Yes. That if somebody says, oh, she's fine, but you just know something's not fine, advocate for your child, because you have that connection to your baby that nobody else has. And you have to speak up for that child, because doctors, unfortunately, a lot of the times will brush you off and say, you know what? You know, she seems fine. Sleep it off. She'll be okay. But if you have that gut feeling that you're like, I am not feeling settled about this, go to someone else.
Yeah, totally. Before we shift gears, because I do want to talk about your relationship and, you know, having Nick as now not only your partner, but also the father of your child, I want to quickly ask you, because you mentioned like how hard sometimes were, then now things are better. Like, have you had any forms of self-care that you've like turned to throughout this that you do for yourself? Was it even possible for you to do self-care during those first 3 months, or was it like completely neglected? Is there something you do now? Like, fill us in on that.
Yeah, I did not neglect self-care, because when I was pregnant, I looked at Nick and I said, do you think me just being able to take a shower is self-care? Do you think that? He's like, no, that's a basic human need. And I'm like, good answer. Correct. So he makes sure that I get time for myself. He would come home from work, and if he knew I had a hard day, he would run to the bathroom, make me a bath, light candles, put music on, and take the baby and be like, go. As long as you need, go. And that's when she was in her screaming, crying phase. So, you know, he really stepped up to the plate during that time and took the weight off my shoulders after a long day. You know, he gets home at 7 o'clock at night and he's like, do anything you need to do. So I did not neglect self-care. Right now, my self-care honestly is just like being outside. I love the warm weather. That's something that really helps me. So I don't really have like a self-care routine or certain things. I feel like I just do things that I know are going to make me feel like refreshed and fill my cup. And if I feel like I'm not getting enough of that, I'm vocal about it. And I say, listen, you know, maybe we got too far off track here. Let's reel it back in, because I need this, and I need this for me so I can be a good partner, so I can be a good mom, so I can be a good daughter, sister, all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually a perfect segue there with, you know, Nick being, it's, there has to be like the right way to word this, because I hate, this is, you know what my question is about to be, because I don't even want to be like, that's so great that Nick is helpful. Do you know where I'm going with this? Like it is so great that yes, like after he just worked all day from the early morning to 7 o'clock, like it is great, but I can't help but then feel like, what are we even talking about? Like this is the thing now. And I need you to really like preach to the girls, because it is so important to pick a supportive and good partner. In Allie's case, I don't think that this was necessarily the intention, but luckily her ex was a good partner and a good person who was absolutely ready to have kids. But for the girls who are picking and like really planning who they're going to have kids with, you really need to make sure you know what you're doing here, because some women are truly single moms out here, even though they have a baby daddy, even though they have a husband, even though they have a boyfriend. It's like they're single moms. And then it's like, you know, the stuff when they say, oh, let's say Nick, for example, Nick is watching the kid. Nick is babysitting. Like your child's father is not watching the kids, is not babysitting. He is taking care of his child. So that's why it's like, I love that you brought up Nick and I love what he's doing. But I also like, I don't even know how to word this without sounding like we're giving praise for like guys just doing what they're supposed to do. But like, you take it away from here.
Yeah. I mean, the father of your child is also an equal parent. And yes, men and women have different roles. But in my case, we both work. I luckily work from home and I have a very flexible career and I am forever grateful for that. But we both contribute financially. So we are both equally responsible for this child, whether I'm not working or working. You didn't make that child on your own. You should not have to burden the responsibilities of the home, of your child, of simply taking care of yourself. And as a partner, you are also taking care of your husband, your boyfriend, your baby daddy, whatever. You are doing all of that. So if the father of your child is going to work and coming home, be like, I worked all day. I don't have the mental capacity to change a diaper. I don't have the mental capacity to clean up after myself, to do the laundry, to cook, to No, you put your foot down and you say, we are equals in this household. We are equally responsible for this child. You are not a babysitter, and he is certainly not just watching the child when you have something to do. So it's important that you have these conversations before you commit to someone and having a baby and raising a family, because you have to be on the same page with parenting. It is so much more than, are you ready to be a dad? I'm ready to be a mom. Let's do this. Like, there is so much more that goes into it. It's, how do you want to raise the child? How do you want to parent? How do you expect us to manage our time, still have a relationship, and raise a baby? Like, what are your thoughts? And make sure you are on the same page, because if your beliefs and your values are completely different, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really, really, really hard, because having a baby is a whole new life. And it's easy to point fingers and run up the tally and be like, well, I did this, you haven't done this. That is not productive. It's not going to get anywhere. And you have to be very much on the same page. And that's not to say you won't have conflict. It's not to say there won't be times where one person is slacking and the other person has to pick up that slack, or one person is not mentally able to do everything they need to do and you need to ask for help. It's not always going to be 50-50. Sometimes it's going to be 80-20, and that's okay. But a majority of the time, you have to know that that person has got your back and your best interest and your child's best interest. And you cannot love someone to the point where you say it's okay if you don't step up to the plate because I love you so much. I don't want to lose you. You have to know that regardless of how much you love that person, if you don't have the same values, the same morals, the same standards for your child, that is not someone you want to start a family with.
It's so true. It's, I mean, we witness this every single day, and it's really, really sad because people, like, unfortunately, love is not enough. And yeah. People think, like, just because I love this person, just because I've been with this person for so long, that it means, like, that we should be, you know, having children together and taking that next step. And sometimes it just could not be further from the truth. And that it's unfortunate, but, like, it is so common. And I will never forget, like, from when, you know, you did find out you were pregnant, like, Nick was just so ready to do whatever he had to do to be there with you and for you and be supportive and fully take on the responsibility and the role. Like, that is the ideal response that you want from a man. Like, the amount of times that girls have, you know, told the guy that they're seeing or whatever, like, I'm pregnant. And it, I think his response is, like, more heartbreaking than the fact that, like, than anything else. And so seeing how he was just so ready and willing and able and capable and made you, I think he brought so much peace to you because of that, because right. You didn't know what the response and what was going to be at this time. So, like, I think it made your life so much easier. And this is exactly what we have always said on this show and in life, is, like, be with someone who adds value to your life and brings peace to your life and makes your life easier. Do not be with somebody who makes it hard to be with them. And so I think that he, you know, like, it is very important and it's very special that you have that. And even aside from now, like, aside from how he's been with the baby now that the baby's here, he was there for you when you were really struggling with pregnancy, because you had a pretty rough go in pregnancy too. I mean, you were sick, you were tired. Like, what did he do for you during those times too, before the baby was here? Because this is what we mean when we say in sickness and in health. And some of your men are forgetting about this part.
Yeah. So let's bring it to the day I found out I was pregnant. We were 1,000 miles away. I was in Tampa. He was in Pennsylvania. And I called him and I'm like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, all right, I'm on the next flight. Like, we're doing this together. And he has been ready to have kids for a long time. I, on the other hand, even when we first started dating, I was like, I don't know if I ever want kids. So keep that in mind, because if you know for sure you want kids, you might not want to be with me. So he came down and immediately, I think the first thing he did when he got to the apartment where I was living was started vacuuming, cleaning, like, all the things. And he was like, all right, let's decide. Are we going to have this baby in Florida, or do you want to go home? Do you want to go to New York? And I was like, we're going to New York. We're going to figure this out. So he flew back to New York because I had to figure some things out with my lease, break my lease, pack all the things. And he figured out where we were going to live, got the apartment, came back down to Florida. Like, he literally worked all day, got on a train at like 3 a.m. to get to JFK, to get to Tampa, to then help me pack all my stuff, get it in the moving truck. He drove me all the way back from Tampa to New York. And from that day forward, it was like I never had to do a single thing for myself during pregnancy, because one, I was so sick and so exhausted. And he was just like, you need to rest. You're growing a human, rest. No, nothing is your responsibility, essentially. And me being me, I don't just sit down and do nothing. Like, I still would do things, and he would get home from work and be like, why'd you do this? Like, why did you set up the nursery? Like, you're supposed to be resting. So he definitely takes my well-being very seriously and puts my well-being, honestly, over his a lot of the times, because even when he's exhausted, he's like, I'm still going to do this for you. I'm still going to make sure you're taken care of. And I think that's something that's so important, because as a man, you should be putting your woman you should be lifting her up and taking on the burden, because you know a woman is going to do the same for you when you're down bad and you need help. A woman is going to nurture you and bring you back to where you need to be. So it's important.
No, it is. And like, don't feel funny saying that, because it is, it's true. Like, I'm sorry, like that. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, everyone's going to have their own values and morals. But if we're going to like take it back and we live a little bit more traditionally. So if we are to uphold our relationships traditionally, like, yes, he has to, you are the priority. Like, first of all, you're not only living now for yourself, but you're also now birthing and living for his child as well. So it's not only like you and your child, it's now you and his child. Like, that, it's something that they will never be able to compensate for, something that they will never be able to do, something that they will never be able to fully understand. They could witness 24/7 of you being pregnant, and either way they will still never get it 100% because they'll never be it. So like, it's something that you have, like, that you need to be cherished for, and like, for them, sorry, but they don't provide that same sort of, in that same sort of way. So they provide in different ways to make sure that you're taken care of, and, you know, and that you come first. And it's absolutely, it's totally true. And I think that has a lot to do with the transition of your relationship as well, because you guys are like older now. Like, when you started dating, you were so young, you guys were like practically kids. And I, this is something that I kind of want to wrap up the episode with, because I mentioned a few times throughout the episode that like, this was your ex. And I think a lot of girls can resonate with getting back with an ex or wanting to get back with an ex. And for you, yes, you guys got back together, but I think what's the most important thing is that you didn't pick up where you left off. You started a new relationship. You did not go back to where you guys once were when you were younger and a little bit more carefree. You started a new relationship as new people, evolved people, more mature and ultimately better people. And I think that's how you can get back with an ex. That's how you can go back. You can't go back to where you were. You have to start something new. So how would you say, like, in what ways would you say that like your relationship has transitioned? And like, how could you, I guess, offer advice in that area to girls who may be in the same predicament?
Yeah, I think going back into it, you have to both be on the same page. Like, this is how we used to act. This is how we used to speak. This is what we used to do. That's no longer. And you both have to be holding each other accountable, because we both had bad habits we had to break. We both did things that we needed to forgive. And it's important that if you're going to start fresh, if you're really going to start that new relationship with the same person, you don't bring those things back into this new relationship. When you get in an argument in this new relationship, you can't go back and be like, but you did this 2 years ago. Like, that relationship is dead and gone. Those people are dead and gone. And it is so unfair to bring the past into the present, especially when you've decided to start fresh. So if you have that tendency to use previous behavior and add it on to what's happening now, you can't do that. And that goes for both people. So it's important that you are in the mindset of, this is new. I have to treat this like new. And if you see old behaviors resurfacing, you have to kick it in the butt right away. You have to be like, listen, we're not going back down this road. We're not doing this again. If we want this to work and we want to have a healthy relationship, we leave that in the past. We don't bring that into this relationship now. And it's something, once again, you both have to be on the same page about. You cannot be the only one being like, oh, this is bad. We're rehashing old problems. Because if the other person doesn't care and they're still really hurt about the past and they're still so tied to what was, it's not going to work. So it's important that it's both people that want it equally as bad. Because if it's just one side, it's not going to work. So really keep in mind that, one, you can't force anyone to change. If someone comes to you and they appear as a changed person, but quickly you realize they're not, nip it in the bud. Because you will never be able to change anyone. You will never force anyone to be who you want them to be. You cannot mold a person into this imaginary person that you have in your head. Because even if they change for a short amount of time, they can go back to the way they were because they were just trying to appease you in that moment. And just know that they have to do the work on their own. You can't make that happen.
You know, like, what just came into my head, and I truly, like, God forgive me for this coming to my head, but, like, Harry Jowsey on Perfect Match.
Yes.
Like, could not be more of an example of someone who appeared. How many times did he say, I went to therapy? Like, and what'd you go, once? Who was the therapist? A girl that you used to fuck? Like, who told you that you were prepared? Who told you that you were ready to take on the outside world? Because they lied. Like, okay, girls, if you did not watch Perfect Match, this man who is a known, like, womanizer fuckboy, known for cheating, known for lying, known for manipulating, goes on Perfect Match with his now, like, 12th girlfriend of the past year or two, does the same song and dance, same shit that he, you know, did to everybody else, and tells her, I'm so sorry, I went to therapy, I'm working on myself, why does everyone keep bringing up my past? Why does everybody use my past against me? And then what? Cheated on the girl with it. They're on the show a few weeks. You couldn't even last a few weeks not making out with somebody else. What?
Yep. Words do not mean anything. You should not ever, allow words to sway you. It's action. Action only, because at the end of the day, anyone can say anything they want. But if they truly mean it, they'll match it with their action.
Oh, yeah. And he did not, in fact, do that. But like you said, like, it's extremely important. In any case, getting back, you know, with the next set, like, you're both on the same page, because it is a common trend that, like, one goes back to the other, and typically the one who goes back to the other is the one who, like, didn't necessarily do the healing, and the one who's, like, minding their own business, moving on, did. And so now they take this person back, and now they welcome this person back into their lives who begged for them back, and it all ends up being the same song and dance. It all ends up being the same, you know, what's that saying? Like, horse and pony show, whatever it's called. Like, the same shit happens. I'm sorry. Maybe not therapy is for everybody. If it is, try it. And if it's not, then you guys need to be consciously working together and mindfully working together to make sure you know what their needs are, their emotional, physical, mental needs. You know what their standards are, what their desires are, what their wants are. Because there's a difference between wants and needs. And you know what, like, needs to really be present to make this a healthy and fulfilling relationship, because you could have somebody's presence, like, you could have somebody with you, but they could also never be further. They could also be so distant in so many ways. Like, I was talking about emotional availability and emotional unavailability. And I was saying, like, when someone is just emotionally unavailable, there's a million different examples and ways and whatnot. But one of the biggest things is, like, you feeling lonely even while being with them. Like, you could talk to them all day, every day. You could be with them every day, but still at the same time, not get any depth and not even know anything about them and still feel like, how is it possible that we talk so much, but I don't even know how you feel. I don't even know, like, where you're at. And so I think the consciousness, the real emotional maturity and availability, like, those are the things that you need to take with you into your relationship if you even think about getting back with an ex. I mean, you need to take that into any relationship, but when it comes to getting back with an ex, maybe people broke up because distance, like, certain things that, like, nothing was ever wrong with the relationship. Oh, we don't live near each other. Oh, we were young, whatever. In that case, whatever. Maybe you don't have too much to work on, but other people break up for differences and, like, we're not working out. So now if you want to work out the next time around, there are major changes that need to be made and you need to evolve.
And usually that means a good amount of time apart.
Yeah.
Because you can't fix something when you're in the mud. When your vision is muddy and you just feel like you're drowning, I feel like you just need to get out. You need to get out and go separate ways and figure it out on individual levels. Because if you're constantly trying to fix it together, I don't know. Maybe that's horrible advice, but for me, we had to go separate ways and to be no contact to heal ourselves.
No, I don't think that that's horrible advice. I think just in general, not all advice is a one size fits all. Some right. people might say, no, like separating isn't what we need to do. We need to stay together and work on this together. But I also get what you're saying in the sense that like, if you guys are already in such a bad place, I mean, you guys took that time apart and it was the best thing that ever happened to you, yeah. you know, and now your relationship is a million times better than it was before. And I think you needed that time apart. And I think a lot of people that break up do. I think you need to like go your separate ways, work on yourselves individually, heal individually, and then reunite rather than like, you know, doing it. And again, it may not be a one size fits all, but rather than doing it together, because you might be bringing the worst out in each other right now. Yes. And you need to just like go fix yourself and then get back and bring out the best in each other.
Yep, absolutely.
I have to ask you because you said nip it in the butt.
Yeah.
It's nip it in the bud. It's not butt, like behind.
What? What's a bud?
I think it's like a flower, like a bud. Like, wait, I gotta look it up because you said the saying and now like it I keeps like replaying in my head that you said nip it in the butt.
No, I think it absolutely has to be butt.
No, nip it in the bud. Nip it in the bud. I'm like typing it and I'm typing nip it in the... And it comes up in the bud. Nip something in the bud. It is to suppress or destroy something at an early level. The idea has been nipped in the bud at a local level. What does nip in the bud mean? It's an expression that means to put a quick end to something. Okay, here we go. The phrase comes from the garden, but has branched out. When a leaf or flower is beginning to form, it's just a little bud. And if you nip it, aka cut it, then it won't grow. You nip it in the bud.
Okay. No one in my life has ever said that. It's always been butt. Unless I can just...
That's why I'm like, no, it has something to do with flowers. Yeah. So imagine a little tiny bud, a little tiny flower. You nip it before it grows.
Well, nip it in the bud.
You said it. And then like we had such a good conversation. So I was like, I want to... finish this conversation and then we'll circle back. All right. Before we go, do you have any last words on your heart or advice, words of wisdom, whatever that you would like to share with the girls about anything that we discussed or anything that you feel that you didn't get a chance to mention?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll just reiterate that things can change so suddenly. So I don't want anyone to ever feel like they're too far gone, like they're too lost, that there's no hope, because there 100% is. And I know what it feels like to feel so alone and to feel like it's never going to get better, or how could things change, or, you know, and if you're currently in that situation, or maybe you're not in that situation, but one day you might be, just know that this is not the end of your story. God is not done with you. He truly still does miracles, and anything can happen. And, you know, sometimes you have to stop forcing things to go the way you want them to go and just surrender, because he can do more with your surrender than with your plan. And a lot of the times your plan is so minuscule compared to his plan and what your life will turn out to be. It's going to be better than you could ever imagine. So hold on to hope and ask for help if you need it.
100%. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. Where can all the girls connect with you online?
Can find me on Instagram at Alexandra Rose Munch, no space or caps. And then I'm also on TikTok for funsies at Alexandra Rose, 2 A's at the end of Alexandra and 2 E's at the end of Rose.
Ellie, it was a pleasure as per usual. Thank you so much for coming back on For the Girls. We love to have you.
Thanks for having me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.